நாராயணம் நமஸ்கிருத்ய நரம் சைவ நரோத்தமம் தேவீம் சரஸ்வதீம் வ்யாசம் ததோ ஜயமுதீரயேத். நஷ்டப்ராயேஷு அபத்ரேஷு நித்யம் பாகவத சேவயா பகவதீர் உத்தம ஸ்லோகே பக்திர் பவதி நைஷ்டிகீ. கிருஷ்ணாய வாசுதேவாய தேவகீ நந்தனாய ச நந்தகோப குமாராய கோவிந்தாய நமோ நமஹ. ஓம் அஜ்ஞானதிமிரந்தஸ்ய ஜ்ஞானாஞ்சன ஷலாகயா சக்ஷுரோன்மிலிதம் யேன தஸ்மை ஸ்ரீ குரவே நமஹ. நமவோம் விஷ்ணு பாதாய கிருஷ்ண பிரேஷ்டாய பூதலே ஸ்ரீமதே பக்தி வேதாந்த ஸ்வாமிநிதி நாமினே. நமஸ்தே சாரஸ்வதி தேவே கௌரவாணி பிரச்சாரிணே நிர்விசேஷா சூன்யவாதி பாஷாதி தேசதாரிணே. ஜய ஸ்ரீ கிருஷ்ண சைதன்ய பிரபு நித்யானந்த ஸ்ரீ அத்வைத கதாதார் ஸ்ரீவாசாதி கௌர பக்தவ்ருந்த. ஹரே கிருஷ்ணா ஹரே கிருஷ்ணா 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 ஹரே ஹரே, ஹரே ராம ஹரே ராம 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 ஹரே ஹரே. We begin the 15th chapter, the last chapter of the 7th canto. It's quite a long chapter. This chapter is entitled Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. Shri Narada Vuvacha கர்ம நிஷ்டா த்விஜா கேசித் தபோ நிஷ்டா நிருபா. கர்ம நிஷ்டா த்விஜா கேசித் தபோ நிஷ்டா நிருபா பரே ஸ்வாத்யாயே அன்யே பிரவச்சனே கேசன ஜ்ஞான யோகயோ.
நாரத் முனி கண்டினியூட், மை டியர் கிங், சம் பிராமணாஸ் ஆர் வெரி மச் அட்டாச் டு ஃபிரூட்டிவ் ஆக்டிவிட்டீஸ். Some are attached to austerities and penances, and still others study the Vedic literature. Whereas some, although very few, cultivate knowledge and practice different yogas, especially Bhakti Yoga.
So in the last chapter, Narada Muni described about Desha, Kala and Patra, the suitable time for performing Shraddha ceremony, and also in general for any religious activities. That's what Vishnu Chakotaku says, that those suitable time and places, not just for Shraddha ceremony, for any religious activities are described by Narada Muni. He described Desha and Kala, and then the last section, 34 to 42nd verse, he described the Patra. Means like, who is the suitable person to whom the charity is to be given or the worship is to be performed. So he described the Supreme Lord Hari is the patra with is the best person to whom charity should be given. And then he also described the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. They are also worthy of, actually they are also the best person to whom the charity should be given. And then he ended the chapter by saying that the Brahmanas are worshipable by even the Supreme Personality of God. So now he is actually continuing the same line. So in this particular verse, he is describing, he is giving gradations of the Brahmanas. I think one of the purport in the previous chapter, Prabhupada talked about the occupations of Kshatriya Brahmana. He talked about a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. But in this verse, he is talking about the gradations of four types of Brahmanas. That one is Grihastha Brahmana, Vanaprastha Brahmana, Brahmachari Brahmana, and then the Sannyasi who is a Brahmana. So he says that Karma Nishta, some Brahmanas are devoted to performing different rituals. This refers to the householder Brahmanas. Householder fixed in karma. Such a person is called as a vipra. Karma Nishta Dvija. And some others are Tapo Nishta. They are actually dedicated to performing austerities. So this type of Brahmanas are Brahmanas in the Vanaprastha order. So the Brahmanas in the Vanaprastha order, they are superior to the Brahmanas in the Grihastha, householder Brahmanas who are fixed in karma. And then Swadhyaye Anye Pravachane. Swadhyaye Anye Pravachane. Some others are dedicated to studying the scriptures and also teaching to others. Pravachane or delivering speeches and Vedic literature or teaching others. So this refers to the Brahmachari Brahmana, those fixed in study and teaching of the Vedas. So this is like a progressive gradation. And the fourth is Kechana Jnana Yogayo. Higher than the Brahmanas who are fixed in studying and teaching the scriptures are those who are fixed in Jnana Yoga, dedicated to Jnana Yoga. Our Prabhupada actually translates as, although very few cultivate knowledge and practice different yogas, especially Bhakti Yoga. So Prabhupada's translation is more devotionally oriented. He is saying that literally it means Jnana Yoga. Those are dedicated to Jnana Yoga. Prabhupada is saying that the highest of those Brahmanas are those who are actually dedicated to Bhakti Yoga. So these are the gradations of Brahmana which are being talked about. And then in the second verse, Narada Muni talks about which Brahmanas one should serve in order to attain liberation. If you remember the previous chapter, Yudhishthira Maharaj asked what question did Yudhishthira Maharaj ask in the previous chapter? Yeah, how can a householder who is basically in the path of enjoyment, Pravritti Marga, he can actually attain liberation? So that was the question. So in that sense, that theme is also coming. The same theme is there. Jnana Nishtaya Deyani Kavyan Anantya Michata Daivecha Tad Abhavesyat Itarebhyo Yatarhatah.
A person desiring liberation for his forefathers or himself should give charity to Brahmana who adheres to impersonal monism. In the absence of such an advanced Brahmana, charity may be given to Brahman addicted to fruitive activities.
So Anantyam means liberation. Anantyam Ichyata. One who desires liberation either for himself or for his forefathers. So Deyani means, Vishnu Chakravartaku says that the offerings meant for the Devatas, and Kavyani refers to the offerings meant for the forefathers. So he says that one who desires liberation should offer the offerings meant for the Devatas and offering meant for the forefathers to the Brahmanas who are actually fixed in Jnana Yoga, who are actually Jnana Nishta. So that means it particularly refers to the sannyasis. One should actually, a grahastha who is actually desiring liberation, he should serve the sannyasis who are jnana nishtas. And in the absence of actually those sannyasi brahmanas, then one can serve those brahmanas who are fixed in fruitive activities. Prabhupada translates that those who are addicted to fruitive activities. Because even the karma kanda activities can also be an addiction. It's more graphically translated. So they, in the absence of a sannyasi brahmanas, charity may be given to other brahmanas who are actually fixed in karmas. So one thing actually, if you see, Prabhupada has given a long purport. So like one important theme which we see, especially in these purports of Prabhupada, and in general actually in any purports, that this principle we also actually need to imbibe when we are preaching. Especially like this principle comes even more clearly when we are reading these purports. The sense that like many of these verses, when you read some of the verses, later verses, like the verses which we read previously in the previous chapter, we read the literal translation of those verses, like we cannot, in one sense, in the, from a Kali Yuga point of view, you may wonder, like, how can be actually this can be practiced in Kali Yuga? So if you read the verses, it becomes like a, it seems like a very ideal, some utopian idea. But when you read the purports, Prabhupada is actually bringing out the application of those same principles in the modern times. So even in our preaching, we have to be, because especially we are dealing with the people who are living outside, our preaching has to be mostly focused on application of the principles. Of course, we give the Siddhanta also, but along with the Siddhanta, the application of the Siddhanta has to be always emphasized. Otherwise, sometimes it may simply remain on a theoretical platform. So Prabhupada, if you read the purport, Prabhupada says, like, the verse is that, okay, charity should be given to the brahmanas who are actually fixed in jnana yoga, jnana nishta. In the absence of finding such a sannyasi who is a jnana nishta, one should actually give charity to a karma nishta. But actually, in Kali Yuga point of view, we may hardly find any, even we may find some, maybe some karma kanda brahmanas or even sometimes jnana, but we don't know even how bona fide they are. But actually, Prabhupada is giving a principle that how Advaita Acharya performed the Shraddha ceremony. So again, we have to see the same principle. The principles are there, but we also have to see how the Mahajans have followed the principle. And even when, how the Mahajans have followed, how the great devotees have followed the principle, especially like the recent devotees, the recent Mahajans, the recent great devotees, the pure devotees, how they followed the principle, that actually, like, that appeals to us more than, like, there may also be information of some others who actually followed the principle in Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga. But in Kali Yuga, the recently, who are the devotees, how they followed the principle. So that becomes a most important factor. That is why Prabhupada is actually quoting Advaita Acharya's example. So, from Advaita Acharya's example, how he followed the principle, we also learn how to apply this principle in the current day-to-day, this one. So, as you know, that famous example of Advaita Acharya, when he performed the Shraddha ceremony, Advaita Acharya was actually the leader of the Brahmanas. And like, especially like in the traditional Hindu's culture, like Shraddha ceremony is considered it's a very important ceremony. People would spend lavishly for the Shraddha ceremony. There are some verses, some instructions regarding to that also. How much one should spend, etc. So Shraddha ceremony was a very important ceremony. And in the Shraddha ceremony, the first person, whom do you feed the first, which Brahmana do you feed the first? The chief Brahmana whom you respect in the Shraddha ceremony, that becomes a very critical factor. But in Advaita Acharya, when he performed the Shraddha ceremony, he actually chose to serve Haridas Thakur He actually chose to feed Haridas Thakur first, and then he actually served prasadam to the other brahmanas. So this is really a bold step on the part of Advaita Acharya. It requires such a great conviction that a Vaishnava who is actually dedicated to chanting the holy name of the Lord, even if he is born in a Mohammedan family, is actually superior to Brahmanas. That verse comes like Brahmananam Sahasrebhyo. What is the full verse from?
Sarva Vedanta Paragaha, Sarva Vedanta Vitkotya, Vishnu Bhakto Vishishyate. And then Vishnu Bhakti, Vishnu, and the Vishnu Bhakta Sahasrebhyo, Ekang Kekyo Anantah, he says. He says, Brahmananam, out of thousands of Brahmanas, one who is capable of leading a fire sacrifice is one out of thousand. And out of thousands of such leaders of sacrifices, one who has learned the Vedanta, is indeed very rare. He says, one out of thousand. And amongst those who are Paraga in Vedanta, very deeply learned, the Vishnu Bhaktas are only one out of thousand. And amongst the Vishnu Bhaktas, thousands of them, there is only one Ananya Bhakta, Kevala Bhakta.
So in a sense, like in the current scenario, we may not be able to, hardly people actually perform the Shraddha also, and it does not matter whom you feed, etc. It doesn't become this. But when you see from the particular actually culture and the time frame, so to choose to actually serve Haridas Thakur first, it is it requires a great conviction and going against the whole society. So Prabhupada is quoting that example. He says that, first of all, in fact, even before that he tells, in this verse it is explained that Anantyam Michata, one who desires liberation. But he says in the case of a devotee does not desire liberation. In fact, bhukti, mukti, bhukti, the desire for liberation, desire for enjoyment, they are considered to be like witches which actually haunt a conditioned soul. And Rupa Goswami gives at least some 35 quotes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, how devotional service surpasses liberation. One full chapter is dedicated by Prabhupada for that. So Prabhupada says that actually a devotee does not desire liberation. In pure devotional service, there is not even a pinch of jnana or karma. So consequently, when Vaishnavas distribute charity, they do not need to find a brahmana performing the activities of jnana kanda or karma kanda. The best example in this regard is provided by Advaita Acharya, who after performing the Shraddha ceremony offered charity to Haridas Thakur, although it was known that he was born from a Mohammedan family. So in that sense, we always have to see how the, I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that there are two kinds of Mahajans. One is the recent Mahajans, another is the previous Mahajans. So out of that, the recent Mahajans are in one sense more important. So the recent Mahajan is like Advaita Acharya, we can say. How he followed this principle, so that becomes an important factor. So by that, we can learn how to apply this principle. So that is how we see most of the purports. Prabhupada, although when you read the translation, it may appear that it's a very utopian principle, but Prabhupada is actually writing purports on how we can apply the principle in the current day-to-day. So then, of course, Vishnu Chakra Thakur writes, some point, he also writes a long purport, I'll just go through that. So he tells that he also in his purport, he tells what is the instruction for the devotees. So this verse tells the instruction for those who desire liberation. As we mentioned, this chapter 11 to 15, they talk about mixed devotional service. So mixed devotional service means it can be Karma Mishra Bhakti or Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Karma Mishra Bhakti means the devotional service performed with a desire for maybe going to heavenly planets or getting some enjoyment. Jnana Mishra Bhakti is devotional service performed with a desire for liberation. But here, Vishnu Chakra Thakur gives instruction for the devotees. So he says that though those practicing pure bhakti should not perform karma, but the devotees who are householders are included when discussing about karma and jnana. However, by performing these actions of karma through appointed representatives. So what he is saying is that although in one sense like only mixed devotees perform they perform karma, these fruity rituals, etc. But even the pure devotee householders, they may also have to perform some of these rituals. Because sometimes being in the material world, sometimes when a person is in a particular situation, in a particular society, one may have to externally follow the social etiquette, social ways, like the principles. So even a pure devotee householder may have to perform some of these fruitive activities. But then he tells the pure devotee householders, they perform these actions through appointed representatives. Just like Bharat Maharaj and Ambarish Maharaj, they performed, do you remember that purport in the fifth canto? It's a very long purport Vishnu Chakra Thakur gives. And Bharat Maharaj was performing different fruitive activities, different sacrifices. That purport also Vishnu Chakra Thakur says that Bharat Maharaj performed this through the help of some representatives. And then he also quotes that verse, Ashraddaya hutam dattam tapastaptam kritam chayat asadyit uchyate partha najatat pratyano iha. One may perform these rituals, but if a person performs without faith in them, just externally, then one does not get affected by them. Basically, to the extent you invest your consciousness, to the extent you are actually affected by the results. So he is saying that a pure devotee householders should perform through appointed representatives, just like Bharat Maharaj and Ambarish Maharaj did to preserve the normal social standards. And in this way, performing these rituals did not produce obstacles in their obstacles to them in their bhakti. So this is the instruction he gives for the devotees. And then after that, he gives two quotes for how your devotee is actually superior to a jnani. This verse says that one should actually serve the jnana nishta. But then he quotes how he says that if a person is desiring liberation, then a person worships or gives charity to a jnana kanda brahmana. But in the case of a devotee who is desiring prema, he should actually worship the pure devotees. Just like the previous verse, the previous chapter, it was explained, Punya Tamo Desha. The best place for performing these rituals is, all those holy places are mentioned. The places where the devotee resides, Punya Tamo Desha. The best places, places where the pure devotees reside. So a devotee is said to be superior to a jnani. For that he gives two quotations. Muktanam api siddhanam Narayana Parayana Sudurlava Prashantatma Kotishvapi Mahamune. And another verse is Name Bhaktas Chaturvedi Madbhakta Shvapacha Priyaha Tasmai Deyam Tato Grahyam Sacha Pujyo Yatakyaham. Name Priyas Chaturvedi Madbhakta Shvapacha Priyaha. A Brahmana may be well versed, he may be a Chaturvedi. But if he is not my devotee, then he is not dear to me. On the other hand, a person may be a Shvapacha, born in a Chandal family. But if he is a devotee, he is very dear to me. Tasmai Deyam Tato Grahyam Sacha Pujyo Yatahyaham. His remnants must be accepted by all. Tato Grahyam. Tasmai Deyam Tato Grahyam. And Sacha Pujyo Yatahyaham. That means, one should know him to be worthy of everyone's worship, just as I am, yata aham. So these are the two quotations he explains, two quotes he explains that What is the injunction for a devotee? He should worship actually a pure devotee with superior to Jnani. And then he explains that in the previous chapter, we also, Naradamuni spoke about how there was, when there was quarrel between the Brahmanas in the beginning of Treta Yuga, the sages actually introduced the process of deity worship. So deity worship was, he mentions that deity worship was recommended for Kanishtha Adhikaris who were not able to appreciate the position of advanced devotees. So in this purport, Vishnu Chakotaku says that Kanishtha Adhikaris or the Jnanis are recommended to worship the deity. Like when the enmity between the living entities became prominent, as mentioned in the previous chapter. But then he says, but this statement does not apply to the devotees. He says, in the case of the devotees, deity worship is the principal anga of bhakti. In the case of the jnanis, like who are actually quarreling with each other, okay, in order to actually purify them, deity worship was recommended. But there, it seems like their main anga is not deity worship, at least according to this purport. But in the case of the devotees, he says the principal anga is actually, worship of the deity is a principal anga of bhakti. In fact, one of the five most important items of sadhana bhakti is that deity worship. Rupa Goswami explains that. And then in order to actually tell about the importance of deity worship as the principal anga for the devotees, Srila Vishnu Chakotakur gives six quotations. Six verses, especially three verses from the Uddhava Gita. Mallinga Madbhakta Jana Darshana Sparshanarchanam Paricharya Stuti Prakva Guna Karmanu Kirtanam. One can purify oneself by seeing, touching, worshipping, serving and offering prayers of glorification. One should also glorify my transcendental qualities and activities here with love, etc. Mamarcha Stapane Shraddha Swata Samhatva Chodyama. One should faithfully and lovingly support the installation of my devotee. Archa Stapana. Stapana of Archa. Shraddha Swata Samhatya. Another beautiful verse that my devotee should then lovingly decorate me with clothing. Yatro Upavita Abarana Patrasra Gandalepanai. In the Uddhava Gita, the deity worship section, 27th chapter, Krishna also mentions that among all the forms of offering, the offering in the form of decorating me is the most pleasing, to me. Like that Krishna tells in the Uddhava Gita. And then, of course, Vishnu Chakradhar gives three more quotations, one from Vishnu Dharma, in which how Vishnu speaks to Ambarish Maharaj. Absorbing the mind in the deity and giving up all else, one should with devotion worship the deity, one's benefactor, and meditate on the deity. While walking, standing, sleeping, or eating, one should think of the Lord in front, behind, above, below, and at one side. Like these verses give an idea how for the devotees actually deity worship is like a principal anga. And then finally he gives two more quotations which especially actually describe, which glorify the Shaligram Shila. Shaligram Shila Yatra Tattirtham Yojanatrayam. The place extending three yojanas around the Shaligram is holy. The person who dies near a Shaligram or a distance of a krosha from it, even in Kikata, goes to Vaikuntha. Kikata is what? Anybody know? Anybody know? Kikata? There is, how many of you know, there is one devotee in Bombay, Dr. Alva. Dr. Alva. He's a disciple of Pejavar Math Swami, Vishvesh Tirtha Swami. Because he has been a friend of ISKCON since almost since 25 years. So he, at his house, he has got 4, 5, now the count must have gone above like some, maybe 500-600 Shaligram or maybe more than that, something like that. And he has got so much of Shaligram Shilas, and he spends something like every day 3 to 4 hours worshipping the Shaligram Shila. And he spends 7-8 hours reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So like that. So this and he takes bath in just in actually the Abhishek water of Shaligram. So if you just go close to him, you will feel the actually fragrance. So yeah, there is another in the same purport. Prabhupada is also quoting these verses, and then he mentions like in the later part of the purport, he is actually writing he is touching upon a theme and a contemporary theme which was going on. He says that in this regard, like because the theme of this purport is that the devotee is superior to even to a jnana. Yeah, like a person dedicated to Jnana Kanda or a person dedicated to Karma Kanda. So in Vrindavan, many Brahmanas, they actually refuse to take prasadam in the ISKCON temple. In fact, Prabhupada was, like even some of his god brothers, many times when they would come to meet him, they would not take prasadam in the ISKCON temple because they felt that it is cooked by some foreign people, some Malaychas and Yavanas. And later one of the god brothers or somebody, they came to Prabhupada asking for some financial help. So Prabhupada said, you people did not want to touch the prasadam cooked by my Western disciples, but you want the money which is actually raised by Western disciples. So like that, Prabhupada was a little critical at that time. So Prabhupada actually writes that theme in this purport. It may be mentioned that Brahmanas in Vrindavan who are Karma Kandis and Jnana Kandis sometimes decline to accept invitations to our temple because our temple is known as the Angrezi temple. But in accordance with the evidence given in the Shastra and the example set by Advaita Acharya, we give prasad to devotees regardless of whether they come from India, Europe or America. It is the conclusion of the Shastra that instead of feeding many Jnanakandi or Karmakandi Brahmanas, it is better to feed a pure Vaishnava, regardless of where he comes from. Apiche Sudaracharo Bhajate Mamananyaba Sadureva Samantavya Samyavyavasito Hisaha. So it doesn't matter whether a devotee comes from Brahman family or non-Brahman family, if he is fully devoted to Krishna, he is a sadhu. So now, in the next verse, Narada Muni tells, how many Brahmanas should a Grahastha invite for these ceremonies? So even the number is also mentioned.
Prabhu, I can ask a question?
Yes.
Thank you. Advaitacharya Prabhu gave the Shraddha Patra to Haridas Thakur. You know, he personally goes and invites him. Then he breaks the social norm to prove to the people the glory of a Vaishnava. You know, of course, if you do it in the modern times, nobody is going to worry about it because there is no caste and no pure standards or anything like that. So in those days, he did it, and in Chaitanya Charitamrita very elaborately it's explained. On the other hand, I heard that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he always ate in the homes of only Brahmanas when he traveled, not to disrupt the social norm, you know. Because if a sannyasi would eat in anybody's home, then nobody would want to hear from him. Nobody would pay respects to him. So he followed the norm, it is there. So my question to you, Prabhu, is what are the different considerations in sticking to the social norms, not to bring about a loss of goodwill of Krishna's movement, or when to break the social norm to prove to people the transcendental nature of Vaishnava culture, no? So, because these two are very great personalities, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Advaita Acharya Prabhu, and both are actually acting differently. So, how do we understand?
Have you also seen Chaitanya Charitamrita, like Mahaprabhu always actually aid in the house of the Brahmanas. I think we have to see, I don't know exactly how we actually reconcile, but I'm just guessing. We have to see like the effect of that, what is the effect of doing that activity on the society. Whether it is going to create some positive vibration, whether it is going to create some goodwill of the people, or is it going to create some enmity or criticism. And of course, in the case of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's not that simply to not break the social etiquette, but one is supposed to in the sense like one should choose things always in the mode of goodness. The sense like of course he did not want to break the social etiquette, but even sometimes if there may be devotees also, but if they are not Brahman family, Prabhupada, that Mahaprabhu, I think, still always chose to actually take prasadam only from devotees.
Varanasi. Varanasi stayed at the house of, I think, Chandrasekhar Acharya. And he ate at the house of Tapan Mishra, I think, is it?
Yeah, yes.
Tapan Mishra. So he did not eat in the home of
Chandrasekhar Acharya. Because
He was a Vaishnava, but he was not a Brahmana. So he ate in another place. But once one Brahmacharya's parent came to Pune, and we took him to one home of same language speaking family, and they fed prasad. So after the prasad was over, while returning back, he asked, oh, they are such good people, they speak the same language and all. But he became a little suspicious. Are they Brahmanas? No, he asked. And then they found out and said, no, they are not Brahmanas, they are non-Brahmanas. So the parents got very wild. How can you take us to a non-Brahmanas home and feed it? He may speak the same language. You know? So sometimes people see, actually then the Brahmachari told them, hey, they are not Brahmanas, they are more than Brahmanas, they are Vaishnavas. But that they couldn't understand. You know? So Mahaprabhu sticking to the social norm for preaching purpose. One point is very understandable from what you said, that if it is going to damage the preaching movement at that time, then Mahaprabhu already took sannyas from Mayavad line only so that he can reach people. But if he breaks this kind of rules, probably preaching might be greatly hampered, I think. Yeah. But I heard Advaita Acharya Prabhu was the leader of all Brahmanas also in his times. He was like number one amongst all Brahmanas also. So being such a leader to do such a bold thing, subsequently, did it have any repercussions? I also don't know.
Since you are asking this question, I want to maybe I'll read Chaitanya Bhagavat a little more and see if there's some details are mentioned. I think it's a very interesting point. But Advaita, it seems he is also going against the social norms. We may take inspiration from that example, and then we may actually sometimes it may cause some damage too. Because even in Jagannath Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Haridasa Thakur was not allowed inside the temple, but Mahaprabhu did not do anything so that he can also enter the temple. He wanted to actually observe the rules of the Jagannath temple. He did not give some special recommendation or something. So in that sense,
in many practical life situations, one example I'll tell you. Just now, a week ago, one group of Bhagavad Saptah people are inviting us for Harinam Sankirtan. So they are going to have some 1,000-2,000 people attending. But the speaker is a Vaishnava. He's not a devotee. But they want ISKCON to come and do Harinam Sankirtan for their Shobha Yatra. So that it will be colorful and they can attract people. So there was a divided opinion amongst devotees. One group of devotees said, oh, if you can do Harinam Sankirtan, ISKCON will become very popular. And with such a big crowd of people, they will all sing the holy name and they will benefit and all. So another group was telling, no, no, we should definitely not go because they will speak nonsense katha and we are supporting them by going and harinam and increasing their popularity of their katha. We should not do. So still they are unable to decide that. Which one would be, you know. That is why I asked.
I think maybe it's interesting to find out like what was the repercussion of after Advaita Acharya referred Haridas Thakur. But this pastime is mainly described in Chaitanya Bhagavat, I think, elaborately. So third verse describes how many Brahmanas to be invited. Dvau daive pitr karyetrin ekaikam ubayatrava bojayesu samruddopi shraddhe kuryan vistaram.
During the period for offering oblations to the demigods, one should invite only two Brahmanas. And while offering oblations to the forefathers, one may invite the three Brahmanas. Or in either case, only one Brahmana will suffice. Even though one is very opulent, he should not endeavor to invite more Brahmanas or make various expensive arrangements on those occasions.
So, dvau daive. Daive means when we are performing oblations to the demigods, then two Brahmanas can be invited. Three Brahmanas can be invited when we perform the oblations to the forefathers, or just one Brahmana is sufficient for both the ceremonies. And even if a person is very rich, one should not endeavor to invite more Brahmanas. Again, Prabhupada in the purport, he gives the example of Advaita Acharya only. So the Lord says that, again he quotes the Namai Bhakta Chaturvedi, the same verse he quotes. So he says that following this principle, one should invite a first class Brahmana or Vaishnava, a realized soul, and feed him while observing the Shraddha ceremony to offer oblations to one's forefathers. So in that sense, the living example, like that brings life to the teaching. Many times, the principle which are mentioned in the scriptures, that we may find it to be some frozen, static principle. But when you see the living examples, they actually demonstrate how to actually follow these principles, and they actually show how this principle is not simply an abstract thing, but it is practical. It is not something, these principles are not something outdated, but they can be practiced, they are actually cutting edge, they can be practiced even now. So Advaita Acharya's example is quoted for how he followed the principle. So now in the fourth verse he says, what if a person invites more Brahmanas? What is the result? Desha kalo chita shraddha dravya patra arhanani cha samyak bhavanti naitani vistarat svajanarpanat.
If one arranges to feed many Brahmanas or relatives during the Shraddha ceremony, there will be a discrepancies in the time, place, respectability and ingredients, the person to be worshipped and the method of offering worship.
So essentially he says that if many Brahmanas are invited, then the respect to the forefathers will be overlooked. So Prabhupada explains that in India, people spend lavishly during the birth of a child, and during the Shraddha ceremony, and during the time of marriage. But the Shastras prohibit the excessive expenditures involved in inviting many Brahmanas and relatives, especially during the Shraddha ceremony. Like now, maybe people hardly perform the Shraddha ceremony. But in the case of marriage, like people spend lavishly. There are some marriages. Nowadays, like marriages happen just for maybe one evening or like half a day or something like that. Like previously, it used to happen 3 days, 4 days, like that, 1 week. So even for half a day of marriage, some like crores of rupees are actually spent. Sometimes certain marriages, one plate of food is actually 3,000, 5,000. So It's a big statistic, somebody was telling, that how much food is actually wasted in these ceremonies. Next verse. So the next verse, Narada Muni tells that, he tells that first one should offer food to Lord Vishnu, then to the forefathers, and then to the suitable person. The result of following this procedure is that one will get everlasting benefit. Desha kalecha samprapte munyannam hari daivatam shraddaya vidivat patre nyastam kamadugakshayam.
Time and place, one should with love offer food prepared with ghee to the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then offer the prasad to the suitable person, a Vaishnava or Brahmana. This will be the cause of everlasting prosperity.
So Muni Annam means forest food or food gained by proper means. Should be first be offered to Vishnu, then to the Pitrus, and then it is given to a suitable person. So yeah, Jananivas Prabhu was telling, like when the Vaishnavas perform the Shraddha ceremony, he mentioned that so we offer food to Vishnu and then we invite the other Vaishnavas and then feed them. We also actually feed, we keep a plate of prasadam in front of the photo of the departed forefather. So many of these samskaras, there is also a way of, there is a Vaishnava way of performing these, many of these samskaras, like many of these rituals. Especially Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he has, in his book Shadkriya Sara Deepika, he has actually explained how to perform, say, Garbhadana Samskara, Namakaran Samskara, Jata Karma, like different, in a Vaishnava way. Because when we invite the Karma Kanda Brahmanas, they actually, they worship the different demigods, they offer oblation to the different demigods. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami, in his book, he has replaced all the demigod deities by, either by Vishnu or the Vishnu's expansions. So that, because the idea why Gopal Bhatta Goswami has written that book is that, in the case of a Vaishnava who has got initiated, after getting initiation, if he worships a demigod, then he is committing a Vaishnava apara. Second offense, the holy name. So in order to save your devotee from committing offense, the holy name, he commits a Nama apara, sorry, not Vaishnava apara, Nama apara. So in order to save your devotee from committing this Nama Parad, so Gopal Bhatta Goswami has explained the same rituals, replacing the demigod deities with the either Vishnu or Vishnu's expansions. So in that way, one will not actually perform this offenses. So in the next verse, sixth verse, Narada Muni explains what should be our attitude while offering prasadam to either to the forefathers or the brahmanas or the general people. So what should be our attitude? So that he explains in the sixth verse. Deva rishi pitra bhutebhya atmane svajanaya cha annam samvibhajan pashyet sarvam tat purushatmakam.
One should offer prasad to the demigods, the saintly persons, one's forefathers, the people in general, one's family members, one's relatives, and one's friends, seeing them all as devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So he is saying that one should see them as the devotees of the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada, again, in this purport, he talks about Daridra Narayan concept. Because many of the purports, Prabhupada talks about Daridra Narayan, because it's basically the nothing but that Manav Seva, Madhav Seva, like another version of that. Because I think previously I talked about once that the Christian missionaries, when they came to India, they, in order to convert more people, they started doing a lot of philanthropic activities, etc. So then at that time, many of these Hindu leaders, they wanted to stop that. So the Christian missionaries, what they were telling is that, so our religion is so great, Jesus Christ is actually so merciful because we are followers of Jesus Christ. So we are actually so compassionate. We are actually doing so many philanthropic activities to others. But you people are followers of Hinduism. You people are so hard-hearted. You are not doing anything for the society. So like that, they were trying to decree. So then these Hindu leaders, they wanted to actually stop the influence of the Christian missionaries. And then they started this concept. So their original idea was there to stop them. But in order to stop them, they introduced some deviant philosophy in which they said, like, in your Christian religion, you are seeing everyone as children of God and you are serving them. They said, we see everyone as children of God, and then we are actually serving them as followers of Jesus. But these leaders, they said, but we see them as God only. So our religion is so great, it is making us people, it is giving such inspiration that we are able to see people as God only. So our religion is even more great. So then they introduce the principle, this philosophy of Daridra Narayan, which is actually basically a Mayavadi concept. Like, Mayavadi means like making an ordinary person as God or bringing God to the ordinary, to an ordinary level of an ordinary person. So sometimes the intention may be to stop the influence of Christians. But in trying to, although their intention was somewhat good, but the means they adopted was, it created actually further deviant philosophy. So, next verse. Na dadyad amisham shraddhe na chadyad dharma tattva vit munyannai syat para pritir yatana pashu himshaya.
A person fully aware of religious principles should never offer anything like meat, eggs or fish in the Shraddha ceremony. And even if one is a Kshatriya, he himself should not eat such things. When suitable food prepared with ghee is offered to saintly persons, the function is pleasing to the forefathers and the Supreme Lord, who are never pleased when animals are killed in the name of sacrifice.
So here is saying that, talking about what food to offer. Already he explained that Muni Annam means forest food or food cooked in ghee. But here he is saying that what food one should not offer, especially the meat or eggs or fish. The Lord is pleased by Muni Annai Syat Para Pretir, forest offerings. He is never pleased when animals are killed. And then in the next few verses also, he is actually talking about in the same theme. The theme that a person may be performing a religious activity, but in performing that, if he is committing violence to other living entities, then such kind of religious activity is a very low religious activity. The highest religious activity is that activity in which a person is not violent to others, either through body, mind or words. So that is explained in the next verse. Naitadrisha paro dharmo nrinam saddharma ichyatam nyaso dandasya bhuteshu manova kaya jasya vaya.
Persons who want to advance in superior religion are advised to give up all envy of other living entities, whether in relationship to the body, words or mind. There is no religion superior to this.
It's a very clear verse that the highest religion is in which a person is not violent to other living entities through body, mind or words. When Lakshmi Devi will read in the 8th canto, when she would be examining the different group of people after she comes out of the ocean of milk, and she was seeing different group of people, and then she was actually rejecting different group of people, and then finally she chooses Lord Vishnu as her husband. So one of the group of people who she rejects is that, she says that, dharma kvachit tatrana bhuta sauhridam. Dharma kvachit tatrana bhuta sauhridam. So she says, some of these people are very religious, but na bhuta sauhridam, but they are not kind to other living entities. So this principle comes, even Rupa Goswami also explains in the, among the 64 items, I think between the 11th and 20th item, that is the some of the things which one should not avoid. One of the items he mentions is that not giving pain to other living entities. Among the 64 items is one of the items, not giving pain to other living entities. So in that sense, even in devotional service, like this principle applies. The next verse, Narada Muni says that a person who is elevated in karma, elevated in spiritual knowledge, for such a person, he need not perform these karmakanda rituals. So explain to the next verse. Eke karmama yan yagyan gyanino yagya vittama atma samyamane niha juhvati gyana deepite.
Because of an awakening of spiritual knowledge, those who are intelligent in regard to sacrifice, who are actually aware of religious principles and who are free from material desires, control the self in the fire of spiritual knowledge or knowledge of the absolute truth. They may give up the process of ritualistic ceremonies.
So, can anybody remember like similar verse from the Bhagavad Gita which gives the same theme? Here he basically says that one who is elevated in transcendental knowledge, he is not obliged to perform this karmakanda rituals. Atma nivata santushas tasya karyam na vidyate. Yeah, that can be one verse. And especially like Shreyan dravyamayad yagyad jnana yagyam parantapa sarvam karma kilam partha jnane parisamapyate. Shreyan dravyamayad yagyad, like better than the sacrifice of different articles, dravyamayad yagyad is jnana yagya, the sacrifice of transcendental knowledge or cultivating transcendental knowledge. And sarvam karma kilam partha jnane parisamapyate, all these sacrifices is ultimately, they should actually culminate in the the cultivation of transcendental knowledge. Jnane parisamapyate. So this is a very important, if you read that purport also, Prabhupada writes a very beautiful purport. Sacrifices sometimes take different forms according to the particular faith of the performer. When one's faith reaches the stage of transcendental knowledge, the performer of sacrifices should be considered more advanced than those who simply sacrifice material possessions without such knowledge. For without attainment of knowledge, sacrifices remain on the material platform and bestow no spiritual benefit. This is from the Bhagavad Gita purport. He says that basically somebody may perform karmakanda rituals, a person may sacrifice certain objects, but with a desire to get greater future enjoyment. The desire to get greater future enjoyment. So such a sacrifice is actually only on the material platform, is on the bodily platform. Because the fact that he is actually desiring greater material enjoyment in the future, that means like he is not having the transcendental knowledge. So that sacrifice is inferior to the sacrifice performed in knowledge. So the Prabhupada writes in that purport that Krishna tells Arjuna that the inner element of wisdom that serves as the proper orientation to sacrificial action is more important than the actual work of sacrifice itself. The inner element of wisdom is more important. And that sacrifice that is directly involved with the culture of inner wisdom, jnana yagya, is better than the sacrifice in which the material ingredients are offered. That is dravya mayat yagya. Because the latter at best leads to the former. Dravya mayat yagya ultimately is supposed to lead to the jnana yagya. So in the most general sense, this verse tells that the psychological sacrifice of one's inner attachments is, this Burjan Prabhu writes, the psychological sacrifice of one's inner attachments is more valuable than merely giving up one's external possessions. The pain involved in conscious, unmotivated giving to another, even if it involves very little in the way of tangible goods, brings greater reward than the sacrifice of great material wealth, but offered with a motive of personal gain. Are you getting that point? In the Jnana Yajna, when a person is having the transcendental knowledge, even if a person only gives them only very little, that is actually superior. That the pain involved in conscious, unmotivated giving to another, even if it involves very little in the way of tangible goods, brings greater reward than the Dharvamayati Yajna with a material motive. This verse also the same. Next verse. So next verse, fourth chapter, I guess it is just before, I think, Tadvidhi Pranipatena, is it? Something like 31, 32. Shreyan Dravyamayat Yajnat. Like, you see the series of verses of Yajna comes that, one of the concluding, Shreyan Dravyamayat Yajnat. From 24 or 25 onwards, Krishna gives a list of Yajnas, the fourth chapter. And then in the conclusion of that, before Tadvidhi Pranipatena, or one or two verses before the details. So in the next verse, Narada Muni says, because now he is talking about, like, the theme is that suppose in the Shraddha ceremony, if we sacrifice the animals, I think there are some, especially like many of these villages also, like the other day we were having the congregational preachers meeting, they were telling that many of the villages, when there is a marriage ceremony or some function, and if the goat or if an animal is not killed, people are not fed liquor, then many people who come there as an insult actually. They feel that it is something like low-class ceremony. So, but like these verses are like very clearly talking about like, can. So this next verse talks about, like, suppose if the animal is killed, like, what do the animals who are killed, what do they think when they see that this person is going to kill them? So that the thinking of the animal is described in the next verse. Dravya yajnair yakshyamanam drishtva bhutani bibhyati yeshama karuno hanyat atagyo asutrubdruvam.
Upon seeing a person engaged in performing the sacrifice, animal meant to be sacrificed are extremely afraid, thinking, this merciless performers of sacrifices, being ignorant of the purpose of sacrifice and being most satisfied by killing others, will surely kill us.
So Prabhupada talks about again Christianity. When Jesus Christ saw some Jewish people killing animals, Jesus Christ, he actually rejected the Jewish religion and he adhered to the Old Testament. And then he made the commandment, thou shall not kill. But at the present day, however, not only are animals killed, the name of sacrifice, but the killing of animals has increased enormously because of increasing the number of slaughterhouses. Unless one is merciless, one cannot sacrifice animals either in the name of religion or for food. Tasmat daivopapannena munyannenapi dharmavit santushtohar ahakkuryan nitya naimitti ki kriya.
For day by day, one who is actually aware of religious principle and is not heinously envious of poor animals should happily perform daily sacrifices and those for certain occasions with whatever food is available easily by the grace of the Lord.
So here is like a concluding theme of these verses. Narada Muni is saying one should not kill animals, but one should perform the instead of killing the animals, one should perform the Nitya and Naimitika rituals. Daily duties, daily rituals and the occasional duties. One should perform them by whatever is available by the grace of the Lord. Tasmad Daivo Upapannena Munyannenapi Dharmavit. Vishnu Chakotara again says Munyannenapi means like by offering forest foods obtained by the grace of the Lord. So we see like this principle comes even in the devotional service. If you remember that I think in the Kapila Dev's Sankhya Yoga section, there's the verse itself Kapila Dev is telling to Devahuti that one should worship me with articles which are obtained with minimal violence. Remember that verse that comes? Lord Kapila Dev tells the Sankhya Yoga section, one should worship me with articles which are obtained with minimal violence. And I remember the 10th canto, when Shrutadev and Bahulashva, when they receive Krishna, when Krishna goes to Mithila, Shrutadev and Bahulashva, they receive Krishna. And they offer actually different, they use different articles in the reception of Krishna. So Vishnu Chakra Thakur actually adds in the purport, he says that, so they use those articles which are obtained without violence in the reception of Krishna. In that sense, there's something like, but especially in cities, most of the things which are available is actually, they may be produced with some chemicals or etc. So this is something, the next step which we have to work upon. Prabhupada says that anyone, whether a grihastha or a sannyasi, can keep small deities of the Lord suitably packed or, if possible, installed and thus worship the deities of Radha, Krishna, Sitaram, Lakshmi Narayan or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by offering food prepared in ghee and then offering the sanctified prasadam to the forefathers, demigods and other living entities as a matter of routine daily work. All the centers of our Krishna consciousness movement have deity worship programs very nicely going on, in which food is offered to the deity and distributed to the first class Brahmanas and Vaishnavas and even to the people in general. And this will bring satisfaction to the Lord. So next verse. Now from 12th to 14th verse, Narada Muni talks about five types of adharma which one should avoid. So he had talked about the different religious principles. Now he is talking about five types of adharma which one should avoid. Vidharma paradharmascha avasa upamachala adharma shaka panchema dharmagyo dharma vatyajet.
There are five branches of irreligion, appropriately known as irreligion. Vidharma, religious principle for which one is unfit. Paradharma, pretentious religious, abhas, analogical religion, apadharma, and cheating religion, chaladharma. One who is aware of real religious life must abandon this five as irreligious.
So these five, Narada Muni is mentioning all the five adharmas in this verse. And then he will explain the four adharmas in the next verse. And then the 14th verse, he will describe the fifth one. So Prabhupada, and I will explain the way Prabhupada has explained and also what the definition given by Vishnu Chakra Thakur. So vidharma, paradharma, upadharma, upadharma, and chaladharma and abhasadharma. These are the five things. So vidharma means, Prabhupada explains that to create a new type of dharma, we will recite the next two verses also and then we'll discuss together. Dharma bado vidharma syat paradharmo anya chodita upadharmastu pakando dambo va shabda bit shalah.
Religious principles that obstruct one from following his own religion are called vidharma. Religious principles introduced by others are called paradharma. A new type of religion created by one who is falsely proud and who opposes the principles of Vedas is called upadharma. And yes. And interpretations by one's jugglery of word is called chala dharma.
Yastvichaya kritapumbir abaso hyashramat pratak svabhava vihito dharma kasya nishta prashantaye.
A pretentious religious system manufactured by one who willfully neglects the prescribed duties of his order of life is called abhasa, a dim reflection of false similarity. But if one performs the prescribed duties for his particular ashram or varna, why are they not sufficient to mitigate all material distresses?
So vidharma means, Prabhupada says that, to create a new type of religious principles that obstruct one from following his own religion is called as vidharma. Vishnu Chakravartakur, he gives the definition as vidharma means that which cancels one's dharma when performed, though one thinks it is dharma. Almost the same meaning. Religious principle that obstruct one from following his own religion. So in the purport, the example which Prabhupada gives is that yato mat tato pat. Like all paths actually lead to the same goal. Like some people give this, I think, Vivekananda Rama, like they have this philosophy. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, however, such fashionable ideas are called vidharma because they go against one's own religious system. And to perform acts which cancels one's dharma, though one thinks it is dharma, that is called as vidharma. Like some people, you'll see, especially in Kali Yuga, so many of these spiritual organizations, it may come under one of these five things. Sometimes people say that one may eat meat, but eat meat without a single drop of blood. And not on Friday, like certain people, they give that. Or during Bhaktivedanta Swami Thakur's time, somebody was actually wanting to donate a show by killing a cow, and he was posing to be charitable. So different people, they actually claim themselves to be religious, but they are actually doing some adharmic activities. So vidharma is religious principle that obstruct one from following one's own religion. And paradharma means, the translation which Prabhupada gives is that religious principles introduced by others. And then Prabhupada says, actually real religious principles are that which is given by the Supreme Lord. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavad pranitam. Navai vidur rishayo napi deva. But according to Vishnu Chakravartakur, paradharma means performing somebody else's dharma, it is actually paradharma. One should stick to one's own duty instead of performing somebody else's dharma. So this may, especially Kali Yuga is an age like where people, like most people are performing somebody else's dharma. Like previously, there is this famous story comes in Ramayana. It's a little controversial story. Many people raise questions on that story. Once how the Lord Ram punished a Shudra. Killing of a Shudra. There was, I think, Brahmana's son died or something like that. Yeah? Is it like when Brahmana's son died and then Brahmana came and reported, and then Lord Rama consulted the ministers, and the ministers said that somebody must be performing some irreligious activity in the country, so therefore it has resulted in the death of this son of a Brahmana. And Lord Ram went on a tour of his kingdom, and he saw a Shudra trying to perform austerities and studying the Vedas, and Lord Ram killed that Shudra. So people questioned that this person was trying to do some good thing only. Why did Lord Ram actually kill this person? So because Lord Ram could understand that this person is performing the duty of a Brahmana, although he is not actually the Brahmana. So he was performing parodharma, performing somebody else's duty. So we see, especially this principle, like even in Kali Yuga, like women, they don't want to perform their duty, they want to perform the men's duty. So that is like the modern culture is trying to do that.
Dronacharya killed Eklavya. He just not killed, he just take the thumb.
Yeah.
So that is also based on this principle only.
And in the case of Eklavya was very ambitious. I don't know whether he was particularly a Shudra or something, I'm not sure. Nishad? Okay.
And also, you know, they are going to work outside for the jobs also. But in our Vaishnava community also, in ISKCON also, is that many women are working. So how can they...
Yeah, one is we have to see, sometimes in Kali Yuga, it may be a necessary thing, like suppose a family, maybe financial condition, it may be that both may have to work. For the earning this one, we have to see that. And sometimes, because another thing is, there may not be necessity, but because even though a person might have taken to a devotional service, but then our one leg is on devotional service and another leg is actually affected by the Western culture. So Western culture, what it does is that it doesn't allow you to actually perform your own duty. Basically tries to imitate somebody else. So even sometimes among the devotees, we cannot tell everyone is like that. Sometimes it can be necessity, but sometimes they are affected by the Western culture. So of course I'm just speaking in this scenario, it is difficult to point out outside. But the point is that when one leg is on, say, Krishna consciousness, and another leg is on Western culture, it will create some problem in the future. We see so many problems in the marriages, etc. But both are trying to perform the same role. So Vedic culture means there is a diversity. There's a diversity. Even among the crops, there is so much of diversity. Even among the animals, birds, we always see there's so much of diversity, so many varieties of birds, so many varieties of animals and plants. So the modern culture, what it does is that it actually destroys the diversity. Previously, there were some 1,000 varieties of rice were there in Assam and all 3 times they would eat rice, but breakfast is different type of rice. Lunch is different type of rice. Dinner is different type of rice. So now there are hardly some 200 varieties of rices. And among the cows, there were some 200 types of cows were there previously. Now only some 27, 30 types of Deshi cows are there. So modern culture, it actually destroys the diversity. So they have destroyed the diversity among the crops, among the animals. And now they are destroying the diversity among the humans also by making the women equal to men. So when you accept the diversity, accepting the diversity means one person has a certain weakness and certain strength. Another person has a certain weakness and another strength. When you accept the diversity, one person's weakness will be taken care of by another person's strength. Among the Pandavas also, Yudhishthira Maharaj had a certain nature. He would take action only after thinking and contemplation. He would not act impulsively. And Bhima had an opposite nature. He would act immediately. So both these natures have an advantage at a certain situation and they are not suitable in a certain situation. But Bhima and Yudhishthira Maharaj, they are different natures, but when Jayadratha was kidnapping Draupadi, That time Bhima took immediate action. Yudhishthira Maharaj was actually thinking, actually. So one person's strength was, weakness was taken, it was actually complemented by another person's strength. So that diversity, keeping the diversity actually, it nourishes the whole system. But if you don't accept the diversity, if you artificially try to make everyone as equal, then it will actually result in a chaotic situation. So women has a certain weakness, certain strength. Man has a certain weakness, certain strength. Instead of recognizing that, if we make men, women also, they say, we also want to play the role of a man. So then it will create an imbalance in the family. So that is why, like, we may have taken to Krishna consciousness, but from the point of your varnashram, so maybe we could be following paro dharma, performing somebody else's duty instead of. So Lord Ram killed that Shudra. So people actually criticize, why did actually Lord Ram kill that Shudra who was performing some good activity only? But actually, because Shudra, it was not his prescribed duty to actually study the Vedas and perform austerities. So, because when a person who does not have the proper qualification, when he does that, he will use that for the wrong purpose. So, because he was performing adharma, so Lord Ram actually killed him. So in Kali Yuga scenario, like first of all, like this particular pastime, even before this, people actually criticize this particular story of Lord Ram. But even in that story, how does the story start? Like one Brahmana coming and complaining to the king that, oh, my son has died. But in Kali Yuga, even this particular complaint, nobody will take it seriously. Like, suppose if somebody comes and says, oh, my son has died, you are responsible, prime minister or chief minister. So that itself actually does not make sense. Because previously, people were more cultured and more dharmic. If a son is dying before the father, that means king is not ruling the kingdom properly. And the fact that even king took that complaint seriously, that shows that it's actually a different era. because in Kali Yuga, we have become so dull that performing somebody else's duty, we don't see that as actually an adharma. But Krishna is clearly saying, Shreyan Swadharmo Viguna Paradharma Sunishtata Swadharma Nidhanam Shreya Paradharma Bhayava. He tells, this verse comes two times in the 3rd chapter and 18th chapter. So, in the long term, when we stick to our Swadharma, there will be individual satisfaction and we can contribute also better to the society. We can actually make a positive contribution to the people around us. We will also be able to maintain ourselves if we stick to our Swadharma. And if we don't stick to our Swadharma, if we try to imitate somebody else's Swadharma, there one is not supposed to be an IT engineer, a person because of certain compulsion, a person becomes an IT engineer. Okay, you earn a lot of money in the short run, but in the long term, sometimes people go through, like even psychologists say, midlife crisis. They feel a deep dissatisfaction, and then sometimes people change their field. They become doctors or some other field. So when we, to the extent we stick to our Swadharma, there can be individual satisfaction, and we can also serve the society better. You have any points on this? Okay. So Paradharma, we'll go a little fast. So next is Upadharma. Upadharma means, he says that Upadharma tu pakandu. So Upadharma is basically rejecting the religious Vedic principles, Vedic scriptures. Or Upadharma means something which resembles dharma but which is not dharma. So it refers to pakanda, pashandis, who reject the Vedas. So can anybody remember, there's one particular example of this Upadharma which has seen previously in the Bhagavatam. Same Upadharmeshu comes previously. Huh? The previous sections in the Bhagavatam. Example of Upadharma. Huh. Yeah, when Indra became sannyasi and started stealing the horse, so many people, they also adopted the same dress adopted by Indra and they started performing religious activities. So there the word comes Upadharmeshu. Sir Vishnu Chakravarti comments that these people, they are actually Pashandis. They took up a dress which resembled the dress of a sannyasi, but these are people who actually rejected the Vedas. And he says that some of the sannyasis were, he puts them in the category of Buddhists. Some of them took up the dress of a sannyasi adopted by Jains. Like that he explains that. Upadharmeshu. And the fourth is Chaladharma. So in the case of Upadharma, yeah, what Prabhupada gives the definition is that a new type of religion by one who is falsely proud and who opposes the principles of the Vedas. Yeah, almost the same though. And the fourth is Chaladharma. Chaladharma means basically misinterpreting the Vedic scriptures. Misinterpreting the Vedic scriptures. Or another meaning which Vishnu Chakravarti says is that one who maintains the word dharma only but acts otherwise. If there is an injunction to give a cow, then the person will give a dying cow. So, here's an example. Chala Dharma. And the fifth is Abhasa Dharma. Huh. So, Abhasa Dharma. Abhasa Dharma means dim reflection of real religion. Which is not exactly religion, but dim reflection of real religion. So, Prabhupada says that a pretentious religious system manufactured by one who willfully neglects the prescribed duties of his order of life is called Abhasa Dharma. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, what he gives definition is that Abhasa Dharma means sometimes a person concocts a particular type of demigod worship which is not recommended for his ashram. The Prabhupada gives a more contemporary definition. A pretentious religious system manufactured by one who willfully neglects the prescribed duties of his order of life. Vishnu Chakravarti was saying, like, especially that was recommended for one's ashram. Instead of following that, a person concocts a different devata worship, different from what is recommended in one's ashram. So we'll go to the 15th verse. So in the 14th verse, Narada Muni says that actually if a person performs the prescribed duties for one's particular ashram or varna, why are they not sufficient to mitigate all material distresses? If we stick to our swadharma, our prescribed duties, then they will definitely mitigate our material distresses. If we try to follow somebody else, then it will actually increase the distresses. Dharmartam api neheta yatrartam vadanodanam anihaniha manasya mahaher iva vrittida.
Even if a man is poor, he should endeavor to improve his economic condition. He should not endeavor to improve his economic condition just to maintain his body and soul together or to become a famous religionist. Just as a great python, although laying in one place, not endeavoring for its livelihood, gets the food if needs to maintain body and soul. One who is desireless also obtain his livelihood without endeavor.
So you see, like, this verse, again, literal translation of the verse, one may be thinking, like, how to follow this. Even if a person is a poor, all these are nonsense instructions for the grihasthas. Suppose if we read this verse, even if a person is a poor, one should not endeavor to improve his economic condition just to maintain his body and soul together or to become a famous religionist. Vishnu Chakravarti says, even a poor man should not strive for wealth in order to execute acts of dharma or maintain his body. And he is, Narada Muni is saying, basically, even a householder should adopt the occupation of a python, Ajagravritti. So Prabhupada in the purport, he is telling like how we should apply this principle in the current time. He says, all the members of our Krishna consciousness movement, whether they be grihasthas or sannyasis, should try to spread the Krishna consciousness movement with determination. And Krishna will supply all necessities. The process of Ajagravritti is a means of livelihood, is very much appreciated in this regard. So Prabhupada is focusing, he's telling that one should actually put effort to spread. And he also gives example of two personalities who followed this Ajagravritti, that is Madhavendra Puri, who practiced Ayachita Vritti, and also Shukadeva Goswami. That is second canto verse, that Kasmad Bhajanti Kavayo Dana Durmadanda. So now, from the 16th to 21st verse, so now, because the theme is that the 15th verse tells that one should be, even if a poor man should follow the, one should not try to improve his condition, one should try to follow the occupation of Ajagravritti. The theme is that like, one should be satisfied with whatever he has. So now the theme of the next six verses, 16 to 21st is, he talks about how he glorifies the quality of satisfaction and he talks about the result of dissatisfaction, or he talks about the nature of greed or danger of greed. The next six verses, that is the theme. Santushtasya nirihasya swatma ramasya yatsukam kutastat kama lobena davato arteha yadishaha.
One who is content and satisfied and who links his activities with the Supreme Personality of Godhead residing in everyone's heart enjoys transcendental happiness without endeavoring for his livelihood. Where is such happiness for a materialistic man who is impelled by lust and greed and who therefore wanders in all direction with a desire to accumulate wealth?
So, where is the happiness of the desireless, satisfied Atma Rama, Nirihasya Swatma Ramasya, for a person who runs in all directions with a desire for wealth out of lust and greed, Kama Lobena? And the next verse he gives a beautiful analogy. Sada santushta manasa sarva shivamaya adishaha sharkara kantakadibhyo yato panat padashivam.
For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, is no danger even when he walks on pebbles and thrones. For him everything is auspicious. Similarly, for one who is always self-satisfied, there is no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere.
So like, I think the beautiful small story kind of this one. A king wanted to go on to forest. The forest is filled with pebbles and thorns. The king told that you put a carpet all over the forest. The minister said, and instead of putting that, you put a nice shoe. Then wherever you may go, you will not actually feel the pain of the thorns and pebbles. So similarly, that if we wear the shoe of satisfaction, wherever a person may go, one will not be troubled by the difficult or inconvenient circumstances. Like what is that verse in the Gita which tells? Austerity of the mind. Mana prasadat saumyatvam stairyam atma vinigraha bhava samshuddhi rityeta tapo manasam uchyate. The austerity of the mind is satisfaction. Mana prasadat saumyatvam. So we'll take a 5 minutes break and then continue. people trying to practice self-realization. Here, Parodharma specifically talks about like somebody who is in a particular varna or ashram, he is performing the duty of some other varna or ashram. Parodharma in specific, it talks about that. Some of this other organization, what they preach, that may come under the category of other Abhasa Dharma, Rupa Dharma, resembling, some of them have rejected the Vedic scriptures, or it is just something they superficially they preach something. This is about Paradharma, especially talks about our if we have a certain prescribed duty, and sometimes instead of, like for example, a grahasa has a certain prescribed duty, vanaprastha has a different duty, but a person who is newly married,
I think liberation, understanding. They have, in fact, many of the philosophies they speak. Not the fantasy.
केन वा राजन् न वर्ते तापि वारिण औपस्त्य जैह्य कार्पण्याद् गृहपालाय ते जनः.
माय डियर किंग, अ सेल्फ सैटिस्फाइड पर्सन कैन बी
So Prabhupada says, actually a satisfied person can be happy even with only drinking water. Na varte tapi varina. On the other hand, when a person is actually driven by the urges of tongue and genitals, one becomes a household dog. Grihapala yate jana. So three points which Prabhupada writes in the purport. He says that who is a true Brahmana? According to the Shastras, a Brahmana or a cultured person will not enter anyone's service to maintain body and soul together. And especially not for the satisfaction of the senses. The second point he explains is that a true Brahmana is always satisfied. Even if he has nothing to eat, simply by drinking water, he can be satisfied. And he says that this is only a matter of practice. And the third point he says is that, it's another beautiful point. He says that, as explained above, a devotee is always satisfied because he feels the presence of the super soul within his heart and thinks of him 24 hours a day. So therefore, he is always satisfied. Because he feels the presence of the supreme super soul within his heart and thinks of him. So now in the 19th verse, Narada Muni talks about the result of greed or the result of dissatisfaction for a Brahmana. He glorified his satisfaction. And in fact, even in the 18th part of the 18th verse also, he talked about the result of dissatisfaction when a person is driven by the tongue and genitals, he becomes a household dog. So 19th verse, he continues on the same theme, result of greed. Asantushtasya viprasya tejo vidyatapo yashaha sarvan sravantindriya laulyena jnanam chaivava kiryate. So here, the result of greed or dissatisfaction is that tejo vidya tapo yashaha. That influence, austerity, education, reputation of a brahmana, spiritual strength, all these things dwindle. And another thing he says that jnanam chaivava kiryate. The knowledge is also thrown away because of the greed of the senses. Teju, Vidya, Tapo, Yashaha, and Jnanam, Chaivava, Kiryate. Spiritual strength, education, austerity, and reputation of a Brahmana dwindle, and knowledge is thrown away because of the greed of the senses. And the next verse, the 20th and 21st verse, Narada Muni talks about the difficult, how difficult he talks about this anartha of greed, how it is very difficult to overcome this anartha of greed. So he talked about the result of greed in the 19th verse. One may wonder, suppose, how to conquer greed. So he talks about the difficult nature of this anartha greed. Kamasyantam hi kshitrubhyam krodasyaitat falodayat jano yatina lobasya jitva buktva dishobuvaha.
The strong bodily desires and needs of a person disturbed by hunger and thirst are certainly satisfied when he eats. Similarly, if one becomes very angry, that anger is satisfied by chastisement and its reaction. But as for greed, even if a greedy person has conquered all the directions of the world or has enjoyed everything in the world, still he will not be satisfied.
So In this verse, Narada Muni is comparing greed with other anarthas. In the case of lust, one can actually one can stop lust by becoming hungry and thirsty. That's what Vishnu Chakotaku says. Prabhupada says a strong bodily desires and needs of a person are certainly satisfied when a person eats. Vishnu Chakotaku says that when a person is lusty, one can actually conquer lust by becoming hungry and thirsty. That means, like, if you fast, by that actually one can actually stop lust. That's what he says. And in the case of anger, by becoming angry at the other person, the anger becomes pacified. Anger is satisfied by chastisement and its reaction. Or one can stop anger by inflicting violence on the object of anger. But in the case of the greed, jitva buktva disho bhuvaha. Disho bhuvaha. Greed cannot be satisfied even by conquering all directions. Jitva disho or buktva bhuvaha. Enjoying the whole earth. What is that verse? Anybody? Sa yittam nirjida kakub ekarad vishayan priyan yatopa josham bunjanu natrupyat ajitendriyah. A classic example of. So Vishnu Chakotaku says that one cannot stop. When one is hungry and thirsty from not eating, because of the action of burning dhatus, one can stop lust. Anger is stopped by violence. Yeah, same point. And then in the next verse, Narada Muni tells the uselessness of good qualities in the presence of strong greed. So in this verse, he compared greed with other anarthas. And the next verse, he says, one may possess so many good qualities, but because of this one particular anartha of strong greed, all those good qualities become useless. Pandita bhagavo rajan bahugya samshayachidaha sadasaspatayopyeke asantoshat patantyadaha.
O King Yudhishthira, many persons with varied experience, many legal advisors, many learned scholars and many persons eligible to become presidents of learned assemblies fall down into hellish life because of not being satisfied with their positions.
So you see, so many words are pandita, learned persons, bahugya, people with varied experience, samshaya chida, expert in legal advice, sadasas pataya, those are eligible to become presidents of great assemblies. But all these people, they fall down because of greed. Asantoshat patantyadaga. They fall down to hellish conditions. So, again, in this purport, Prabhupada tells that there are two qualities which nullify all good qualities. Two bad qualities nullify all the good qualities which a person may possess. So he says that poverty and greed. When a person is greedy, even if he has many good qualities, that one greed will actually nullify all the good qualities. And he also tells the same thing in the case of poverty also. If one is poverty stricken, all his good qualities become null and void. And therefore, the adjustment is that one should not be poverty stricken, but one must try to be fully satisfied with the bare necessities of life and not be greedy. For a devotee to be satisfied with the bare necessities is therefore the best advice for spiritual advancement. Learned authorities in devotional life consequently advise that one not endeavor to increase the number of temples and mathas. So he's applying the principle and as I mentioned previously, that like Prabhupada's purports are more application oriented. He's applying this principle for a devotional line. Sometimes even on a in our devotional service, a person may increase so many mathas or so many temples and so many centers just for actually name, like reputation or something. I think if you remember, one of the items of sadhana bhakti is also like not opening big temples or not having many disciples. And then Prabhupada adds that, but such activities can be undertaken only by devotees experienced in propagating the Krishna consciousness movement. In the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami has written that principle, and he only actually built the which temple? Govindji temple, which is like one of the biggest temples. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti, I think, writes in the purport, he says that, but when something is pleasing to the Lord, even though it may involve like huge endeavor, one may actually undertake that endeavor in order to actually please the Lord. I think today morning in the DT room also, in the Prabhupada's lecture, Prabhupada is telling the same point. Like sometimes, suppose you want to build a temple of $20 million. Prabhupada says that if it is impossible, so a devotee, one should not actually undertake such an effort. It becomes actually prayasa, like over endeavor. So then he gives examples of different acharyas, that Ramanacharya, Bhaktivedanta Saraswati, they constructed large centers. Therefore, temple construction is not bad, provided proper care is taken for the propagation of Krishna consciousness. Even if such endeavors are considered greedy, the greed is to satisfy Krishna, and therefore these are spiritual activities. So now, from the 22nd to 25th verse, Narada Muni gives a beautiful series of verses in which he tells how to conquer different anarthas. Very beautiful series of verses. Asankalpad jayet kamam krodam kama vivarjanat Arthanartekshayalobam bayam tatvava marshanat.
By making plans with determination, one should give up lusty desires for sense gratification. Similarly, by giving up envy, one should conquer anger. By discussing the disadvantages of accumulating wealth, one should give up greed. And by discussing the truth, one should give up fear.
Yes, things in the first canto, 9th chapter also, if you remember, the Bhishma Dev's purport, another purport also, Prabhupada gives how to overcome this, how to overcome that. Something similar here also it comes. So one conquers lust by not making plans with determination. Or Vishnu Chakravarti, one conquers lust by negative determination. So just like the famous example that suppose on a fasting day, even though one may be hungry and thirsty, but if a person is determined to not drink water, then by that he actually is able to tolerate that. So similarly, if one is determined not to live with a woman, even while seeing a woman, he will not become lusty. If one is determined not to have sex, he can automatically conquer lusty desires. So many times people ask, like, how to become determined? For many of these actually how to questions, the answer is like, you have to be determined. That's all. It's not that sometimes we expect, oh, we expect an answer that we switch on some button and then we become determined. No, it's like, we have to be determined. That is in our hand. And then another thing is that krodham kama vivarjanat, one conquers anger by giving up the desire for violence. Or by giving up envy, one should conquer anger. And another thing is that artha anarthe ikshaya, by discussing the disadvantages of wealth, one should give up greed. Here he is giving the solution for greed. So there's a very beautiful verse which comes in 11th canto. In relation to Avadhut Brahmana story. Arthasya sadhane siddhe utkarshe rakshane vyaye nashopaboga ayasas trasas chinta brahmo nrinam. this verse talks about the different stages of wealth. In yearning, attainment, increase, protection, expense, loss, and enjoyment of wealth. So all the different stages of wealth are put in this verse. Either it says yearning or spending or enjoying or trying to increase. And all this, all men experience great... I didn't know the verse number. Arthasya sadhane siddhe. Arthasya sadhane siddhe. Utkarshe rakshane vyaye. Nashopaboga ayasas trasas chinta. It comes in Avadhut Brahmana section. So in all these stages, all men experience great labor, fear, anxiety and delusion. So this is like a classic verse too. By discussing the disadvantages of wealth, one can actually give up anger. And then, bayam tattvava marshana, one can give up fear by considering, okay, Prabhupada says that one should give up fear by discussing the truth, one should give up fear. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, what he says is that one gives up fear by considering that all suffering is caused by karma. Next verse.
Anvi shikshya shokamohau dambam mahadupasaya yogantarayan maunena himsam kamadya nihaya.
Discussing spiritual knowledge, one can conquer lamentation and illusion. By serving a great devotee, one can become prideless. By keeping silent, one can avoid obstacles on the path of mystic yoga. And simply by stopping sense gratification, one can conquer envy.
So here we see that Kripaya Bhutajam Dukkam. No, that's the next verse. So Anvikshaya Shoka Moho, the classic example we see many places in the Chitraketu Maharaj, he was overcome with lamentation and illusion. And by discussing, by considering what is Atma and non-Atma. Or by discussing spiritual knowledge, one can conquer lamentation and illusion. And this is also important. Dambam Mahadupasaya. I think one of the previous presentations was pointed out that. Because we are doing sadhana bhakti, we may chant many rounds, etc. That is definitely good. But sometimes we're doing sadhana, but then unless we come in contact with, unless we actually humbly serve another great devotee, the spiritual master, still this anartha of pride can be always be there. Even during our sadhana, we are most of the time we are there only with our mind actually. We may chant more rounds, that is definitely good, but then still we are there with only our mind. But then when we are there, we are trying to serve an advanced devotee, Mahadupasaya, by serving the spiritual master, advanced devotee. And by that, especially this anartha of pride can be destroyed. And Yogantarayan Maunena. And the classic example is Rishabhadev. Especially for those who are mystic yogis, that they have so many mystic powers. And these mystic powers can actually, they can create so many obstacles. By keeping silent, one can avoid obstacles on the path of yoga. Rishabhadev, he just remained silent. Again, those many people would actually throw stones, etc. Himsam kamadyanihaya. By giving up the desire for sense gratification, one can conquer violence. One can conquer envy. Next verse. Kripaya bhutajam dukkam daivam jakhyat samadina atmajam yoga viryena nidram sattvanishevaya.
By good behavior and freedom from envy, one should contract sufferings due to other living entities. By meditation in trance, one should contract sufferings due to providence. And by practicing Hatha Yoga, Pranayam, and so forth, one should contract sufferings due to the body and mind. Similarly, by developing the mode of goodness, especially in regards to eating, one should conquer sleep.
So this verse talks about how to overcome the three miseries, adhyatmika, adhibhautika, adhidaivika, and also how can we conquer sleep. So in regards to miseries from other living entities, Prabhupada says that by having good behavior, Vishnu Chakotaku says that one conquers violence to other living entities by doing beneficial acts for them. So, can anybody remember a verse, one very similar verse which says that how by good behavior we can actually overcome the miseries from other living entities? One verse previously. Gunadikan mudam lipset anukrosha gunadamad maitrim samanat anviche natapar abibuyate. So, that by having the three kinds of behavior towards the superiors, equals, and the inferiors, natapar abibuyate, one can actually overcome the miseries from other living entities. By being happy with somebody, becoming happy with somebody who has better qualities, by creating friendship with equals and being compassionate to inferiors. Daivam jahyat samadina. So, here it is explained that by meditation and trance, one can overcome this adhidaivika miseries. So, Vishnu Chakotaku says that one conquers anxiety from seeing women. Because he says, Daivam means undue mental affliction caused by natural signs of disaster. But nowadays we don't even know what are the natural signs of disaster. But one conquers anxiety by seeing natural signs of disaster by concentration on the Lord, Samadhina. And Prabhupada is, one more point. And then he says that Atmajam Yoga Viryana, especially the miseries from our own body and mind by performing Hatha Yoga. By practicing yogasanas, one can conquer miseries from our own body and mind. And in the case of conquering sleep, Vishnu Chakotaku says, one should take small quantities of sattvika food. And by serving other living entities, one can conquer sleep. By eating small quantities of sattvika food. And Prabhupada writes that, any country where people indulge in unnecessary killing of animals will have to suffer from wars and pestilence imposed by material nature. Comparing one's own suffering to the suffering of others, therefore one should be kind to all living entities. The recent, Nepal earthquake is also one of the evidence. I think some months back or some years back, last year, some huge number of animals were actually slaughtered in Nepal for some. Are you aware of that? Like there was one particular Devi or some festival, which comes once in several years. So many animals were even transported from India. And they were actually slaughtered in Nepal. Yes, 2 months back. How many animals? 2 lakh animals? 2,50,000. It's like a huge quantity. So that's like resulted in this. And it's actually even scientifically proven fact that how the slaughter of the animals, it creates actually pain waves, etc. So next verse, rajastamascha sattvena sattvam chopashamena cha etat sarvam gurau bhaktya purusho hyanjasa jayet.
One must conquer the mode of passion and ignorance by developing the mode of goodness. And then one must become detached from the mode of goodness by promoting oneself to the platform of Shuddha Sattva. All this can be automatically done if one engages in the service of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. In this way, one can conquer the influence of the modes of nature.
So this is an important verse. It says, Rajogun and Tamogun can be conquered by Sattvagun, by increasing Sattvagun. And Vishnu Chakotako says, like Sattvam Chopa Shamenacha means, one can conquer Sattvagun by being indifferent to the results of actions. Or by one can conquer Sattvagun by promoting oneself to the profound Shuddha Sattva, according to Prabhupada. And then one can conquer, but all these obstacles quickly and easily by devotion to the spiritual master. And he adds one more point. For the jnanis, destruction of lust and other obstacles is a sought result of devotion to Guru. They are also devoted to Guru, but for the purpose of destroying these anarthas. But in the case of the devotees, destruction of these anarthas is a secondary, unsought result as a result of devotion to Guru. So that is the difference between the jnanis and the bhaktas. This is like devotion to Guru is like one broad spectrum antibiotic. Then we say like one broad spectrum antibiotic which actually destroys everything. So one conquers all the obstacles quickly and easily by bhakti to Guru. This is like taking a strong medicine which cures all diseases. Next verse.
Yasya sakshat bhagavati jnana deepa prade gurau martya saddi shrutam tasya sarvam kunjara shauchavat.
The spiritual master should be considered to be directly the Supreme Lord because he gives transcendental knowledge for enlightenment. Consequently, for one who maintains the material conception that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being, everything is frustrated. His enlightenment and his Vedic studies and knowledge are like the bathing of an elephant.
These are very important verses. This next two verses especially talk about how one should not treat the spiritual master as an ordinary person. Jnana Deepa Pradeh Guru, because spiritual master gives the lamp of knowledge and is a spiritual expansion of the Lord. Yasya Sakshat Bhagavati. And one may study all the Vedic scriptures, one may study thoroughly, but if he does not have devotion to the Guru, then all the study of the Vedic scriptures becomes like a kunjara shauchavat, bathing of an elephant. So Vishnu Chakotakur adds one more point. For one who thinks by faulty intelligence that Guru is even an amsha of the Lord, or in whom the Lord is directly present, is an ordinary mortal. And whatever he has heard, such as the Lord's mantra, his process of hearing and his contemplation become useless. Like even if a person thinks that Guru is only an amsha of the Lord, or in whom the Lord is directly present, is an ordinary mortal. Basically, in a sense, it means like thinking Guru to be an ordinary person. Next verse.
Yeshavai Bhagavan Sakshat Pradana Purusheshwaraha Yogeshwarair Vimagrangrair Lokoyam Manyate Naram.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is the master of all other living entities and of the material nature. His lotus feet are sought and worshipped by great saintly persons like Vyas. Nonetheless, there are fools who consider Lord Krishna an ordinary human being.
So now the connection between the previous verse and this verse is that sometimes one may say that you are telling that spiritual master should not be considered as an ordinary person. But the family members of the spiritual master, they may consider whom we consider the spiritual master as an ordinary person. So by seeing that we may think, oh, he's also an ordinary person. But in this verse, Narada Muni is warning the family members may consider spiritual master as an ordinary person, but we can never consider spiritual master as an ordinary person. So he says, he uses an example that even Lord Krishna and Balram or Lord Ram, like their feet were sought by the great yogis, but they are certainly the supreme lords. Though people, the persons who appeared along with them, thought of them as human. Those who were present at the time of Krishna and Lord Ram or Lord Balram, they considered them as human beings. But then we should still consider them as the supreme lords. So similarly, some people may think the guru is a human being, but one should not consider the guru like that. So the last line in the purport, that is a very, the spiritual master is as good as the supreme personality of Godhead, and therefore one who is very serious about spiritual advancement must regard the spiritual master in this way. Even a slight deviation from this understanding can create disaster in the disciples' Vedic studies and austerities. Even a slight deviation from this understanding. We can see clearly that in the case of Indra, nonsense, he offended Brihaspati for one moment. And that too, just by not getting up. And then after that, like immediately within some time, he immediately realized that actually, well, I committed a mistake. He wanted to actually beg forgiveness from Brihaspati. He was looking for Brihaspati. But even a slight deviation from this understanding can create disaster. It actually created so much of disaster for the demigods. Next verse. Shadvarga samyamaikanta sarva niyama chodana tad anta yadino yogan avehe yushramavaha.
Ritualistic ceremonies, regulative principles, austerities and the practice of yoga are all meant to control the senses and mind. But even after one is able to control the senses and mind, if he does not come to the point of meditation upon the Supreme Lord, all such activities are simply labor in frustration.
So the theme of this verse is that like some people may perform different other processes, ritualistic ceremonies, or controlling the mind and senses, different rules, etc. But Narada Muni says, but all these other processes, they do not produce meditation on the Supreme Lord. They do not produce concentration on the Supreme Lord. And what to speak of? Attainment of the Supreme Lord. So therefore, all these processes are useless. The theme is that, therefore he says, so if a person wants to attain the Supreme Lord, only by bhakti to the Guru, one can attain the Lord. So that is the theme of this verse. The ultimate goal of yoga is to come in contact with the Supreme Lord. Unless this point is achieved, one so-called yoga practice is simply labor without any benefit. Next verse. In the next verse, he gives an analogy. Yata varta da yohyarta yogasyartam na bibrati anartaya bhaveyusma purtam ishtam tata sataha.
As professional activities or business, profits cannot help one in spiritual advancement, but are a source of material entanglement. The Vedic ritualistic ceremonies cannot help anyone who is not a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So here Narada Muni says, one may perform different occupational duties, or professional business, etc. But those activities, they do not produce liberation. They do not produce spiritual advancement. They only entangle a person. So similarly, one may perform different Vedic rituals and different Vedic processes, but if a person is not a devotee of the Lord, then following those processes do not bring attainment of the Lord. Next verse.
Yas chitta vijaye yatta syanis sango parigraha yeko vivikta sharano bhikshur baikshyamita shanaha.
One who desires to conquer the mind must leave the company of his family and live in a solitary place, free from contaminated association. To maintain the body and soul together, he should beg as much as he needs for the bare necessities of life.
Yeah, again he comes to the point of like the process of liberation for the householder, says that he should actually leave the company of his family and live in a solitary place free from contaminated association. One who desires to conquer the mind must leave the company of his family. And especially, Prabhupada says that sannyas means accepting a life of begging, which makes one automatically very humble and meek and free from lusty desires. In this regard, the following verse appears in the Smriti literature. Okay. Next verse. Deshe shuchau same rajan samstapyasanam atmanah stiram sukam samam tasmin asi tarjanga omyati.
My dear king, in a sacred and holy place of pilgrimage, one should select a place in which to perform yoga. The place must be a level and not too high or low. There one should sit very comfortable, being steady and equipoise, keeping his body straight, and thus begin chanting the Vedic pranam.
Yeah, just one point before we go into this one. I remember the previous verse explained that a householder should leave the company of his family and live in a solitary place free from contaminated association. I remember that I think many years back there was this one devotee called Stoka Krishna Prabhu. He was previously Brahmachari and then he became a Grahastha. So he got a cancer and then he was about to leave his body. When he was in the deathbed, I think as soon as Radhanath Swami Maharaj came and told his family members that at least you should keep away from him. That otherwise if you are all the time close to him, then he may become attached to all of you and then it will actually obstruct him in his journey, in his further journey. So especially, and I was hearing another instance recently, there was another congregation devotee in Bombay, like Kirtida Mataji. She is also a very senior devotee. So when this Mataji, she also got a cancer when she was actually about to leave her body. So once Maharaj came to meet her. So that time he said that you are very fortunate because you are surrounded, you are being surrounded by all your family members and they are chanting Hare Krishna. So many, especially for a man actually, for a man, the sannyas is like they have to go away from the family. Like he becomes entangled in the family. So that's why it's explained that one must leave the company of his family. Of course, even for a woman can also become attached to the family. There's no doubt. Anybody can become attached. But it is, there's no such recommendation for a woman that one should leave the family or take sannyas. But let's explain. So in this verse, Narada Muni talks about the process of yoga. He talks about the place for yoga, the asana, posture, and what one should do after the particular posture. So he tells that one should actually chant the sacred syllable Om, Vedic Pranava. So Prabhupada writes a detailed purport about Shuchau Deshe Pratishtapya. And then he talks about, one of the theme of the purport is that, like, when a person is recommended to chant Om, unless one is fully convinced of the Supreme Lord, one has a tendency to become an impersonalist yogi, searching for the Supreme Lord within the core of his heart. But here the chanting of the Omkara is recommended because in the beginning of transcendental realization, instead of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one may chant Omkara. And there is no difference between the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and Omkara because both of them are sound representations of the Supreme Personality of God. And then he says, difference between Omkara and Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is that in the case of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, it can be chanted at any time and any place. But in the case of Omkara, there are particular consideration of time and place and sitting posture. And then finally he says, but in Kali Yuga it is very difficult to find a suitable place according to recommendations of the Gita. So, but and then he says, but even in chanting Hare Krishna, if we have a proper posture, it will help. although for yoga it is absolutely necessary, but even in chanting also, he says that having a particular posture, keeping the body straight, will actually help in the chanting process. And 32nd and 33rd verse, Narada Muni talks about the practice, how to practice yoga. And I think in the 17th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says that, you know, the series of verses, 17th chapter, last verse, Om Tat Sat Iti Nirdesho Brahmanas Trivida Smritaha Brahmanas Tena Vedasya Yajnasya Vigita Parat. Since time immemorial, people are chanting this syllables, Om Tat Sat, but they actually indicate the Supreme Brahman. So Om also indicate the Supreme Brahman. So the next, you can read the translation, 32-33.
While continuously staring at the tip of nose, a learned yogi practices the breathing exercises through the technical means known as a Purak, Kumbhak and Rechak, controlling inhalation and exhalation and then stopping them both. In this way, the yogi restricts his mind from material attachments and gives up all mental desires. As soon as the mind, being defeated by lusty desires, drifts toward feelings of sense gratification, the yogi should immediately bring it back and arrest it within the core of his heart.
So here, he describes the process of yoga, and Prabhupada is saying that the easy way to practice is bhakti yoga, and for whom this particular process of yoga, Ashtang yoga, is helpful, this is for ordinary men in the bodily concept of life. For ordinary men in the bodily concept of life. And then the next verse, Narada Muni tells about the result of yogic practice. So result of yogic practice is a person attains peace in a short time. His heart becomes fixed and free from disturbance like a fire without flames or smoke. Prabhupada in the purport, he says one can attain the same peace by accepting Krishna as the proprietor, and he is the master of all the three worlds and the well-wisher of all living entities. Bhoktaram, Yajna Tapasam, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. And then the 35th verse, Narada Muni says, then having attained peace, when a person's consciousness is uncontaminated by material lusty desires, it becomes calm and peaceful in all activities. For one is situated in eternal blissful life. Chittam Brahma Sukhas Prashtam. Brahma Sukhas Prashtam means he is actually situated in the transcendental bliss of realizing Brahman. He is touched by the Brahman happiness. Then when a person comes to this happiness, Naivo Tishteta Kargichit, one does not return to materialistic activities. So basically the theme is that when a person experiences the higher taste of Brahman happiness, one does not return to the material happiness. Prabhupada in the purport, what he talks is that, he says that even if a person reaches this Brahman happiness, but if he is not engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, then he will fall down. Arukhya krichrena param padam tata patantyado anadrita yushma dangraya. So Prabhupada said, in one sense, like little more contradictory, it may appear to be a contradiction to the translation, but is a more devotional purpose. So because the 35th verse talked about like how a person will not fall down when a person reaches the stage of experiencing the Brahman happiness. Now the next two verses, 36 and 37 verse, these two verses talk about the fallen sannyasis. Like suppose, because Narada Muni has been talking about like a grihastha has taken a sannyas, and then after taking sannyas, he's in a secluded place, he's practicing yoga, and then he's attains peace, and then he's tasting the Brahman happiness. But after that, suppose such a sannyasi falls down, then such a sannyasi is condemned. So he's condemned in the two verses, 36 and 37th verse. 36th verse tells that a fallen sannyasi is considered as shameless eater of his own vomit. And 37th verse tells that such a fallen sannyasi is the worst of a sinner. We will recite these two verses. Yaha ప్రవ్రజ్య గృహాత్ పూర్వం త్రైవర్గావప్పణాత్ పునః యది సేవేత తాన్ భిక్షు సవై వాంతాస్య పత్రపః.
వన్ హు అక్సెప్ట్స్ ద సన్యాస్ ఆర్డర్ గివ్స్ అప్ ద త్రీ ప్రిన్సిపల్స్ ఆఫ్ మెటరలిస్టిక్ యాక్టివిటీస్ ఇన్ విచ్ వన్ ఇండల్జెస్ ఇన్ ద ఫీల్డ్ ఆఫ్ హౌస్హోల్డ్ లైఫ్, నేమ్లీ రిలీజన్, ఇకనామిక్ డెవలప్మెంట్ అండ్ సెన్స్ గ్రాటిఫికేషన్. One who first accepts sannyasa but then returns to such a materialistic activities is to be called a vantushti, vantashi, or one who eats his own omit. He is indeed a shameless person.
So he is called a vantasi. So this is a very strong statement actually. Indeed, the Prabhupada says that if one accepts sannyas at an immature stage, there is every possibility of his being attracted by women and lusty desires, and thus again becoming a so-called grahasa or victim of women. Such a person is the most shameless and is called vantashi, or one who eats that which he has already vomited. But although this purport is a very strong purport, exactly little opposite to this mood, Prabhupada's more compassionate mood comes out in the Gajendra section in the 8th canto, 2nd chapter. There he says that even suppose if a sannyasi falls down, because one should not give up the fight against Maya, but one should get married and continue to practice devotional service. But at that time when Prabhupada was writing that purport, one sannyasi actually fell down, one senior leader. So in order to encourage the devotee, Prabhupada is actually telling that one should never give up the fight against Maya. 37th verse.
Yai swadeha smrito natma martyo vitkrimi basmavat tayenam atma satkritva shlagayantihya sattama.
Sanyas is who first considers that the body is subject to death, when it will be transformed into stool, worms or ashes, but who again give importance to the body and glorify it as the self, are to be considered the greatest rascals.
So in this verse, again a fallen sannyasi is described, because when a person takes a sannyas, he is supposed to be above the bodily concept of life. You remember that pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Sanatana Goswami got that all those boils. Mahaprabhu was again and again embracing. One of the reasons which Mahaprabhu gave is that like, Sanatana Goswami was getting disturbed, but Mahaprabhu said that actually the Lord has given these boils in order to test me. Because as a sannyasi, I'm not supposed to make distinction based on the bodily differences. So Lord was testing me by giving you boils, whether I am making distinctions or not. So sannyasi is supposed to be above the bodily concept of life, but after taking sannyas, if he again comes down to the bodily concept of life, he is considered to be a greatest rascal, or is considered to be the most sinful. So Prabhupada, again in the purport, he gives two categories, two examples from the contemporary times, who fit into this category of sannyasis who have fallen down to the bodily concept of life. One is that he says, the Daridra Narayan. There are many sannyasis in India who stress the importance of the body. Some of them give special importance to the body of the poor man, accepting him as Daridra Narayan, as if Narayan had a material body. The second category he says is that, many other sannyasis stress the importance of the social position of the body as a brahmana. That is, somebody may not be qualified as a brahmana, but because he is born in a brahman family, they call him as a brahmana. That means that this also like on the bodily concept of life. So they are shameless because they have not yet understood the difference between the body and the soul, and instead have accepted the body of a brahmana to be brahmana. So now, continuing on the same theme, so he has talked about the fall down of a sannyasi. Now in the next two verses, Narada Muni talks about when a person falls down from the other ashramas, grahastha ashram, brahmacharya ashram, vanaprastha ashram, And also he talks about the fall down from a sannyasa ashram. What is considered to be fall down from these four ashramas? And then he also talks about how we should deal with such a person who has fallen down from a particular ashram. You can read the translation.
Is abominable for a person living in the grahastha ashram to give up the regulative principles, for a brahmachari not to allow the brahmachari vows while living under the care of the guru, for vanaprastha to live in the village and engage in so-called social activities, or for a sannyasi to be addicted to sense gratification. One who acts in this way is to be considered the lowest renegade. Such a pretender is bewildered by the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one should either reject him from any position or taking compassion upon him, teach him, if possible, to resume his original position.
So you will see again, actually we can see the compassionate nature of Prabhupada. Like Vishnachakra Thakur, he writes in this commentary, like when we see these people who have fallen from these ashramas, according to Vishnachakra Thakur's translation and purport, he says that one should neglect giving them mercy since they are bewildered by the Lord's Maya. And in this purport, he says that this means that when they die, one does not give them teachings on the truth out of mercy, since such teachings will be useless to them. It's more in one sense, a stricter side. But Prabhupada, in his purport, he says, even in the translation, he says that one should take compassion upon them and teach them, if possible, to resume to their original position. And the purport also says, such person should be shown compassion, and if one has sufficient strength, one should teach them to stop them from following the wrong path in life. Otherwise, one should reject them and pay them attention. He's saying, one should try to maybe elevate them. If they are not changing, then pay them no attention. He's including the Vishnachakotaka's purport also, but he's also... it's also adding that one should try to actually teach them, stop them from following the path. So especially if we see, for brahmachari, what is considered to be fall down? So in the translation, what Prabhupada says is that not to follow the brahmachari vows while living under the care of the guru. And the purport, Prabhupada brings out a beautiful point. He says that if a brahmachari does not live under the care of a guru, it is considered actually a fall down. So that means, what does it mean is that, so like brahmachari means like one has to live under the care of a guru. Just like women means, we say that she's always supposed to be under the protection of one of these husband. Similarly, brahmachari means he has to be under the care of a guru. He has to be in the guru's ashram. So the fall down from Brahmachari ashram means like having independent lifestyle, like without the sanction of the spiritual master. So especially if we see this principle, many times somebody enters the Brahmachari ashram. So in a Brahmachari ashram, sometimes there are certain rules and regulations are there. And especially in the modern setup, sometimes people feel, oh, it is suffocating, why there is so much of this one. So, but actually, if we try to introspect, because right from the beginning, because we have been leading an independent lifestyle, like all the hostel culture, the college culture, it only promotes independent lifestyle. And then with such a conditioning, when a person joins the ashram of a guru, and then when he hears about certain rules and discipline, and we find to be something like a very, some artificial situation. So that is not because of that, that is mainly because of our conditioning, we are actually perceiving that to be artificial. So just like, as I mentioned, like, I give an analogy of that. Suppose a person is in a blind island, surrounded by only blind people, And when he hears somebody talking about beauty of the, like the waterfalls and trees and mountains, then he may find that person to be like a stranger or a peculiar person. And he may find that person as a crazy person. So that is because he had been only brought up in a blind island. He had been actually surrounded by only blind people. So similarly, many times in the Kali Yuga, we have been surrounded by people who are blind to the normal culture. And then when we come in contact with, when we come to a place where some normal culture is being enforced, and then we find to be strange or something peculiar. And another thing, in the case of fall down for a vanaprastha ashram, it is explained that tapasvino grama seva. So grama seva means to live in a village and serve the people therein, or Prabhupada translates as engage in so-called social activities. So in the vanaprastha ashram, like when a person is in the grihastha ashram, a person is supposed to like take care of social obligations, attend marriages and so many social functions. But in the vanaprastha ashram, one has to put an end to the social obligations. In the 11th canto, I think 30th or 31st chapter, at the time of disappearance of Krishna, so all the demigods from higher planets, they came to know that, oh, Krishna is going back to the spiritual world. So they came to actually meet Krishna. So that time it is described that Krishna closed his eyes and fixed his mind upon himself. So Vishnu Chakravarti says, why did he fix his mind upon himself? Because Antakaleche Mameva is demonstrating that principle. In the case of Krishna, it is he only the Supreme Lord, so therefore he is fixing his mind upon himself. But he closed his eyes because he knew that all these demigods are going to request him that, oh, on the way, just come to my house, the Swargaloka, or Maharaloka, Satyaloka, just pay a visit to our house. So Krishna wanted to avoid all these social obligations. So therefore, he didn't even want to give them a chance to actually ask them. So they just closed his eyes. So in that sense, he is demonstrating the culture which a person is supposed to follow at the time of Vanaprastha or this one, that how one should not actually entertain social obligations. So next verse, and then the next verse, Narada Muni specifically condemns again a fallen sannyasi. Any other translation, 40th verse.
Form of body is meant for understanding the self and the supreme self. The supreme personality of Godhead, both of whom are transcendentally situated, if both of them can be understood when one is purified by advanced knowledge, for what reason and for whom does a foolish, greedy person maintain the body for sense gratification?
So, such a person. So if a person cleansed by knowledge knows that he is a soul different from the body, then with what desire and for what reason does that person again nourish the body? So again, like sannyasi going into the bodily concept of life is described. Prabhupada actually, he goes into more contemporary times, because there are certain sannyasis who said that, oh, fish is a vegetable of the sea. Huh? What did he say? Jalerafal, yeah. So they actually, many of the sannyas, they were eating meat. So he is saying that this is also a bodily concept of life. Especially with sannyasi, not only maintains the body by ordinary means, but does everything to maintain the body, including even eating meat and other abominable things. He must be a lumpata, a greedy person simply engaged in sense gratification. Another example is that, you know, that pastime of Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu going to meet one sannyasi who was. But he had a wife and offered some nectar, something. So now, I'll just take the next verse and then I will end. Now in the next six verses, Narada Muni gives the analogy, 41 to 46. So this is he's comparing. We'll just recite the next verse. ஆகுஷரீரம் ரதமிந்திரியாணி ஹயான் அபீஷூன்மண இந்திரியேஷம் வர்த்மானி மாத்ராதிஷணாம் ச சூதம் சத்வம் ப்ருஹத் பந்துரம் ஈஷ ஸ்ருஷ்டம்.
Transcendentalists who are advanced in knowledge compare the body, which is made by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to a chariot. The senses are like the horses. The mind, the master of the senses, is like the reins. The objects of the senses are the destinations. Intelligence is the chariot driver. And consciousness, which spreads throughout the body, is the cause of bondage in this material world.
So in this, Narada Muni gives an elaborate analogy in the six verses. He is comparing to the comparing the chariot to the body, and then the different senses to the senses are like the horses, mind, the master of the senses, like the reins, intelligence, the chariot driver. So Prabhupada explains that it is therefore said, Atmanam Ratinam Viddi Shariram Ratam Evacha. The body is just like a chariot or car in which one may go anywhere, one may drive well, or else one may drive whimsically, in which case it is quite possible that he may have an accident and fall into a ditch. In other words, if one takes directions from the experienced spiritual master, one can go back home, back to Godhead. Otherwise, one may return to the cycle of birth and death. Ashradadana Purusha Dharmasyasya Parantapa. So the advice of experienced transcendentalists, therefore, is that the body be fully engaged for achieving the ultimate goal of life. The real interest or goal of life is to return home back to Godhead. So one should take lessons from these Vedic literatures and learn how to practice Nivritti Marga. And the body is important as long as it has consciousness. And then he says that one must change his consciousness from material to Krishna consciousness.
I think this will continue tomorrow. It's a very long chapter. There's another at least 50 pages are there. Mostly it will be completed tomorrow, 7th canto. Grantharam Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.